Steve, is there anyone on frequency? We're doing a radio check. For LWE Mobile.
WE, this is N0TR, November 0, Tango Radio. My name is Tom. Over.
Hey, N0TR, this is Larry, K4LWE Mobile, just heading back from my son's house, working on a little boat project. Back to you.
Sure, well, that sounds fun. It's a beautiful day out there. Is it? I'm writing that down. N4LWE, is that correct?
That's right, and if you could come back with your call sign, I'll write it down also.
November 0, Tango Romeo, N0TR, and my name's Tom, and that's my initials.
I believe I recognize your voice, Tom. Either heard you on HF or on 2 meter. I've been doing a lot of HF lately, just it's new for me, so it's pretty fascinating. Over.
Matter of fact, I worked two new bands this morning, Larry. Ogasawa Island, over by Japan, I think. Whoa, I dropped the mic here. Just turning on the computer, and I'd have to look that up to make sure. And I don't have it in there right offhand. It was a long call sign, but they was on two different bands this morning. I was really pleased. I've worked them before. There it is. Juliet Delta 1, Bravo Mike Hotel. His name's Harry. And I've worked them before, and they're on Chichijima, Ogasawa Island. And it says, not Manami Torishima, which I would have much rather had that one. Over.
I've noticed that the bands are good on certain days. I've been able to contact people up in Canada on 18 meters and on, what else? Can't think of what other frequencies or what are other bands now, but been able to make some contacts. I've got just a 100-watt rig, so I run barefoot and either use my 75-meter end-fed half-wave, or I've got a 40-meter off-center dipole. So I'm able to reach out a little bit, but as I said, I'm just getting started, so a lot to learn. Over.
A lot to learn. I've been doing it 26 years, Larry, and I'm young compared to some of these guys around here. I'm 72 years old. But I had a TS-140 Kenwood for 19 years, and it was 100 watts, and I had worked way over 200 countries before I moved down here, and I do have an amplifier now, and I really enjoy it. It's a solid state one, finally, in my lifetime, and it works quite well. It was very easy to work those guys this morning. I think you could have easily worked them on 100 watts, to be honest with you. I do mostly CW, however.
Yeah, I just got my technician and general ticket in June of this year. So I've been studying CW using the resource that the Greer Radio Club puts out there, Gary, you know, Whiskey Echo, or Whiskey 4 Echo Echo Yankee. Pretty good resource. And so I'm about halfway through the alphabet, but I've got a ways to go and get my speed up from 10 words a minute. Over.
Well, you're doing great. You've got 10 words a minute already. I started out as a technician in 93, and I said I'd never use CW. And if you wanted more frequencies in, it was incentive licensing. So you had to pass the test. And so I did the Technician Plus, which was 5 words. And then I took the General Written, passed it. And then later on, I took the 13 words a minute, passed it. And I took the Advanced, and I said, I'll never go any further. And I wanted that last little 25 kilohertz. And the only way to get it was to work. And if you're willing to work, Larry, you'll get up there. it was 20 words a minute, and I thought it impossible, but I finally got to it, but it probably took 3 months of, at least a half hour to an hour a day. You can get burned out on it, but I highly recommend a set of paddles, not a straight tee. You'll never get there on a straight tee.
You called the call sign, Tom, but there's a gentleman who put out a design for a set of paddles he made with using a plastic ruler and some wood pieces, and I actually built a set of paddles, and I also built some electronics that takes care of the did-da, you know, the right-left and that with the paddles, so I've been using those from the onset. I bought a straight key, but I really never used it after my friend talked about some tendonitis it gave him in his thumb. Over.
Median Tower, quick, would you? I'm drinking some vitamin C here. You wound up my lap.
Bernice, give me a hand, Tower.
And, yeah, it, I know some guys that were accomplished at it, but very few. And, I don't know, it's just like using a bug. I just never could get used to that. But I do love the paddles. And I usually operate around 28 words a minute, 26, 28. I can go 30. But I haven't been doing a lot of it due to the sunspots lately. So I'd be lucky if I could copy 20. I'll just be honest with you.
It's something to learn. I've been working on studying for the amateur extra, which is also because of that extra bandwidth that you get. And also so I don't get in trouble going out of my general band. And that's been interesting and fun. I spent 40 years as an electronics engineer, so all the math and components and properties and such are things I worked with during my career. So most of it's memorizing all the new rules and learning a little bit more about how signals travel and such. But that's been interesting, and it's kind of pushed the CW to the background. But as you recommend, I need to spend more time, or at least spend some minutes a day at the paddles. Over.
For Lima Whiskey Echo, this is N0TR. Yeah, Larry, I'll tell you, it's extremely rewarding once you can carry on a conversation. That tickled me to death the first time I could do that. Now, I don't use any electronics that... I had one time that you program and you push a button, you know, because I wanted to do a little contesting, and I don't care for contesting, but I will work them and pick and choose something that I need to cover a band. But as far as turning in a score or anything like that, I never do. But I have a lot of friends that just love to contest and have done it for years. I would rather get on there and have a conversation with somebody. Like, I worked a guy that was an old railroad telegrapher many years ago. His name was Jiggs, G-I-G-G-S. And he knew the American Morse code, I think it was called. But anyways, he said the railroad stuff they used was different. And he was like 99 years old. And wow, if that isn't history, I don't know what is. And I've gotten really nice letters from guys in Micronesia and Australia and New Zealand that I still have in my catalogs that wrote me letters after we had a conversation on CW. But it's fun just to work like this morning to give them a 599 and pick up an extra band. I picked up 40 and 30 for that particular one in Japan. And I was hoping it was Jan Mayan, which is a JX instead of a JD. No joy on that. Well, Larry, let me drop this. I was started out in electronics, electricity, if you will, as an AE in the Navy in and was in a flight crew on an S2DNE off a carrier, and then I switched over to duty with brother when my brother caught a P3 Orion squadron. My wife and I just got married, and I figured I could bring her out from Kansas and take her off the farm and get set up out there before I went to Vietnam. And we did. And then I come back, and I worked in electrical and electronics the rest of my life, and mostly in a large machine shop. But I think that advanced test was the hardest test that I took as far as the electronics in the ham test. Although the extra class had a lot of satellite work and stuff that I never used. It's interesting, but I just never used it to pass it. And then I took the commercial test just for the heck of it, in case I needed it to get a job someday in 4LWE and 0TR.
They're really impressive, Tom, and I'm right there with you as far as contesting. I also like fishing, and I have a friend that always wanted me to join him in bass tournaments, and I said that would take all the fun out of the hobby for me. For me, it's about relaxing, talking, just enjoying the outdoors. Yeah, I'm right there on contesting, and I enjoy talking to people, carrying on conversations. I think I talked to a guy out in Kansas for 30 minutes just about Jeeps and restoration and this and that. So I enjoy a conversation more than just the signal report right back to you. K4LWE, back to you.
This is Andrew TR. Yeah, I'm exactly the same way. I like to think of myself as a... maybe a relative of Will Rogers. I never met a person I didn't like. There are a few exceptions in there, Larry, but very few, I'll have to admit. I enjoy people, enjoy talking to them, and I like to write you. I should do that on the 2-meter net, and I don't, and there's some really fine guys that run the nets, John and Gary and different ones. And by the way, W4DEY is one of the finest there is out there, period, in all respects. He's an officer and a gentleman, shall we say. But I learned Morse code from tapes. When I first started out, I was in CB back in the 70s, and I bought a Radio Shack record that went to 13 words a minute, and it was a 33 and a third RPM record in minor straight key. And I still got the record, but you know, it was just impossible for me. And then I met a friend of mine who stepped on a landmine in Vietnam and was blind, and he was an extra class. And I thought, well, if Eldon can do it, so can I. And so I got to work. It shamed me into doing it. And both his eyes were blowed out. He had two glass eyes and shrapnel all over him. And a very fine ham operator. But I got busy and done it. And I'll tell you, it's just a better mode. You'll pick up more on CW than you ever will on sideband until the sunspots really peak.
My radio has a waterfall display, so I can see CW just super active, really, really active. So, Tom, this is K4LWE. I'm at my QTH, and I'm going to wander inside and eat a sandwich. Enjoyed talking with you, and I'm sure I'll catch up with you again on the air sometime. Back to you.
Larry, I really enjoyed the conversation. I'm looking at a picture here. Let me bring it up. And it's of a gentleman playing with wood box. And it looks like he makes churns and buckets and that. Boy, that's neat. My wife, we used to go out to her mom's place on the farm there. We lived in Kansas 62 years in the southeast corner of Pittsburgh, Kansas. And and the kids would churn butter, and they would grind grain in the mills and that, and my wife was on the farm until she was 18, and I took her off, so, wow, that really looks neat. I just brought your website up, and it's beautiful. I'll read it. You take care, Larry. Pleasure's all mine. K4LWE, this is N0TR73.
TR, K4LWE 73, and have a Merry Christmas, you and your family, and stay safe out there. I'll be clear.
Yeah, Merry Christmas to y'all, too. And I'm learning those words down here, Larry, y'all. it's a different language, but oh, it's so nice down here. This is the land of Oz, that's A-H-S, and we come from the land of O-Z, Oz. And I guarantee you, we left Toto and Dorothy up there. We love it down here. Been here 10 years. 73's later. K4LWE and 0TR, clear.
Hey, Tom, in 4DJC. How are you doing today?
Iron and Frog here, split three ways. Can you beat that?
It sure is nice outside today. It's been warmed up a good bit, that's for sure. Compared to a couple of days earlier. You guys staying inside today? You've been out wandering around.
Oh, I went out and I blowed some leaves and forgot that it was still a little bit chilly. I did have to take one nitro, but after that I was fine and got a little too hot. I had a vest on and a jacket under it. And then I went down and pulled my antenna up too tight, and I had to go back and take it loose and readjust it back down some on the super loop. You don't want them too tight because they'll break in a windstorm. And so I got that adjusted right. I put out a little fried chicken for the varmints down at the back of the property and changed out the SD card in the game camera. The last time we had three raccoons, one fox, and one possum, and two deer. Over.
Very much. We had a couple of groundhogs under the neighbor's storage shed next door, and they would, one of them was a big one, too. He must have weighed, he or she must have weighed 40 pounds. One of the biggest ones I've ever seen. And they were down in a vacant lot down here for a while. They moved up under this shed. One moved in, then another moved in. And I was a little afraid to take a shot at them, but they were digging around her foundation, too, which is something unusual. And her son-in-law came out there and took care of the younger one, the little one, within a day or two. And it took a while to get the big one out of there, but I told him, I said, oh, I can get rid of them now. I said, I'll put a 220 out there and put a 220 Conibear out there and put a piece of plywood over so a dog or a cat can't in there. And they get out of there. I said, that'll get them every time. But I think he finally shot one of these. He's a 22 caliber pellet rifle. It was one of these high velocity types. It had a crack to it, like it was breaking the sound barrier, but it was, I would have shot him with a .22 rifle, but called pistol, but I'd have to get elevated because I'm a little afraid of ricochets when it's standing ground level.
Looking at the raccoon sitting on the log here, Bernice, I just put the other SD card in. Yeah, those are really much more effective than the 177. We had a factory that was shut down, and they asked me if I could thin out the pigeons down there. And I mostly shot them with a .22, but the other guy had a .22 pellet gun, or .20 caliber pellet gun. And it was a pump-up. I don't know. I think it was, Sheridan, Franklin. I don't remember what it was. But that .20 caliber was really lethal on them, much more so than the 177. And I had a neighbor that had those groundhogs and big ones, and there were several of them, and they'd dig holes that were 18 inches in diameter, and they were inside of one of her old sheds, and I didn't know what to catch them with. I had have heart traps. And finally, somebody said, put cabbage in there. And boy, I caught them the next day, Jerry.
Just to get these out, they used, they said they love cantaloupe. And so they had some cantaloupe that busted up a cantaloupe or two. This has been several months ago. Busted up a cantaloupe or two, just had that. They got on that thing in a hurry. They love that cantaloupe. The big one's a little smarter than the smaller one was, but, man, they're going to have to move the shed. It's a big one. It's probably 16 or 18 feet long by maybe 12 feet wide. They got to move it, and it's not sitting on a foundation. It's still got a little space up under it. Somebody said, if one's moved out of there, there's another one moving. I said, as soon as the weather warms back up in, they get scurrying around. I guess they do hibernate here. I don't see them usually when the weather gets down and when they get up by 50 degrees, I don't usually see them out on the roads. But they used to make a mess of, we had a family, the family farm that was in trust for years, and it actually belonged to my uncle and my grandfather. My dad had a little bit of it too. We used to raise some cattle out there back in the 60s, and they plant soybeans out there. They get out in their soybean fields and dig a hole out there, just make a mess. When you put them with a tractor or something, they make a mess out there because it was a big hole and you couldn't see them a lot of times. But they took up out their soybean fields, and that's the only way to get them. He'd ride along with a tractor, and sometimes he'd have one of the guys that worked with him go ride, have a 22 rifle with them and shoot them as they came up, and then cover up the hole. Those things, they can go 8 or 10 feet deep.
Well, that. Well, there's one deer here in the picture and one possum. didn't get a very good picture of the deer. But that chicken ought to draw them in tonight. Usually I get a coyote or a fox, but mostly those dadburn raccoons. And if you put a squirrel down there, they'll eat a squirrel in a heartbeat, which surprised me. Her mom had an invasion of them, of raccoons, and we couldn't figure out what it was. They chopped the head off a lot of times, not every time, and then go in under the wing and eat the insides of the chicken out. And we didn't know what it was, a badger, a weasel, and we just didn't know, because we really didn't have badgers that far south. And, however, 100 miles north they did, so it would have been possible. Turns out it was raccoons. She never did tell me that they were getting them for a long time, and I guess they got about 135 chickens. And so I went out there and set double spring traps, and I went down the pasture and I shot 10 rabbits. And we ate the rabbits, but I used the entrails for bait. And I caught a coon that was like 30 pounds, Jerry.
Oh, yeah. A raccoon will eat just about anything. Possums, if they get in my wife's grandfather used to have chicken houses. He lived over in Royston, Georgia. He had a chicken house over there. And possums do the same thing. They get in there and they'll, especially if somebody's got a small coop or something, they get in and dig up under there and they'll take the head off as well, and eat the same way that the raccoon does. I thought it was a raccoon. It was the only thing that did that, and he told me the possums do the same thing. Well, possums eat, they love to eat copperheads too, so I don't pay that much attention to it. But we got a neighbor here that's got a chicken coop, and I think she's got maybe 3 or 4 chickens in it, but I have to watch for the snakes get over there. Those big rat snakes will get over there, and they'll start getting in there and getting eggs. I saw one out in the backyard. I couldn't tell what it was. It looked like a mirage, like you ride down a road. And a daggum black snake. He's about 7 feet long. He's just taking his time going across the yard. But I don't think he got in the chicken coop. But that's what they. I said that's. And it's going to attract them in the hawks, too. We got 2 or 3 hawks down here, sharp shins, and mostly red tails. But, those chickens should draw those things in. I hadn't seen a fox this year at all there. The coyotes, I think the coyotes have done some damage to the foxes in some areas.
Well, they could. I never thought about that, but I've never seen them both there together. Well, I got two possums last year. The lights come on bright out back, and it wakes me up. I have real thin eyelids. And the first one was out there, and the first time I seen him, he ran. The next time I seen him was 1 o'clock in the morning, and I put a bullet right between his eyes. And then at 2 o'clock in the morning, the lights come back on, and Mama come out looking for her husband. And the minute I opened that window on the bathroom there, she took out running, and I took a Hail Mary shot at that one, but I got a scope. And she ran towards the darkness, and they're hard to see once they get out of the light. And I knew where I was shooting at, though, and there's nothing back there. And next morning, I found her about 10 foot behind the chicken pen.
I usually, I got a .22 revolver. I use it a little bit easier. More, my left eye is not so good anymore for a scope. I'm left-handed, but I use a .22 revolver. Of course, it's no good at night. And I put, like CB shorts or CB longs in it because they don't make a lot of noise. But I've killed a few out here in the backyard. I leave the coats and stuff. I don't use a sieve. I hear them, but I don't use a sieve. I don't have a trail cam or game cam right back. I ought to put one out there, I guess. But I see a lot of deer. I've driven up in the yard some evening. We've had 7 or 8 deer in the backyard. And like Santa's missing his team almost. But possums, I see possums there once in a while. We got a skunk that comes through the front yard about 2 o'clock in the morning. So he or she's been coming through usually about once or twice a week. And the dig them, the scent's so strong, Tom, it wakes me up. I mean, so I always get frisky or what it is, but it sprays in the yard. And I don't think anything's killed it yet, but my wife was afraid it got up on his ass. I said, no, it ain't getting up on his ass. I was just walking out but blow his wood down and spraying as it goes, I guess. I said, it must be. I don't know whether they use it part of the territory or what, but it sure it wakes me up. That's weird.
Had a skunk, Jerry?
I was afraid something had gotten in our garage, maybe. The first time I noticed it woke me up. I went outside and looked around. You could smell it real strong out in the front yard. And I went around and looked in the garage to make sure it hadn't gotten in the garage because we'd had a groundhog getting in the garage about 3 or 4 years ago. It took me a thing ever to get that son of a gun out. It was a little bit when I finally pried it if it got him out of there. But I'm always concerned about something getting up out of the house or getting in the garage after that. But it was definitely a skunk. But I hadn't seen it, I just smelled it.
We was going someplace the other night, wasn't we? And man, that about knocked you out. There was one out there, but you know, that's the first time we ever smelled one out here. In Kansas, they were very common. You didn't want to hit one with your car either. It'd stink for weeks. But they're rascals, I'll tell you. That brought back an old memory. When I was a little kid, I had a .22 single-shot Marlin, and Dad was a railroader, so he was gone, and we heard the dogs barking under the house, and they wouldn't come out when we called them, and they just kept barking. So Mom said, "You got to go under there," and I said, "Well, I ain't going under there without a gun," and so I took the .22, and it was real low. The house was built in the '40s. And I crawled back in there, and sure enough, there was a possum. And the dogs were in the corner of the house, and the possum was out about 10 feet. He wasn't doing anything, but they weren't about to come by him. They were just small dogs. And in fact, he'd probably killed him if necessary, although they're not aggressive usually. But when attacked, any animal will fight. So I shot the possum, and I got the dogs out. Well, a couple of weeks later, we started smelling this real horrible smell emanating from under the house, of course. And Mom asked me, she said, "What is that?" And I said, "I don't know." And she said, "Did you bring that possum out from under there?" I said, "You said to shoot the possum. You didn't say nothing about bringing it out."
That's hysterical. Possums, my late father-in-law and mother-in-law, they lived in Harlow their entire, lives, I guess, or Bowman or something in that area over there, just across the river. And my wife's mother always loved to have cats, and had this one old tomcat they had, and of course they would occasionally, they wouldn't normally let him come inside, because he was good at keeping the chipmunks and stuff away. And they built him a little house out there in near their open, they had open like a carport thing. They built him a little house out there, put a light bulb in to keep him warm at night during the real cold part of the winter. And they went out there, they couldn't figure out why the cat was outside. And her dad would have had looked in there, it's a possum, that thing hissed at him, open. You think something got him, but he jumped back. I was saying, I said, is it a possum? He said, you gonna help me get it out? I said, I'll help you get it out. Let me get my rifle, I'll help you. He said, no, he said, I don't want to kill it. I said, well, I ain't touching that darn thing. Not with it being alive.
Well, I got two other old stories. I'll tell you, one time Mom smelt something in my bedroom I shouldn't tell on myself. And I was real young, and I don't know if it was my dad and brother or something. They'd been duck hunting, and I was probably 8 or 9 years old. And anyways, they'd shot a mallard, and one of us had. I don't think I even went back then until I got older. And so I'd seen this taxidermy stuff, and so I just kept that green head off of that mallard and stuck it in my desk drawer in my bedroom. She found that one too, Jerry.
I used to love to hunt. I hunted, all types of critters, I guess. I always loved to hunt does. Did a fair amount of duck hunting, deer, turkeys, and I love squirrel hunting. I always enjoyed that. That was my dad's favorite as well. That's about all he ever did when I was growing up, I guess. But I'd killed a turkey back in, this has been probably close to 30 years ago, South Carolina had a fall turkey season, which is unusual. It was like 2 weeks at Thanksgiving, but you could only use a shotgun or a bow. And I'd been deer hunting a good bit in this one spot, but I kept seeing these turkeys come by, and I said, well, you know what I'm going to do? I said, I'm going to go up there next time. And a friend of mine and I hunted this one particular spot. Kind of been staying there. I was bow hunting. Gun season was open, but I like to hunt with a bow. And I had a bow there, and he told me, he said, now, back, you could actually shoot a hen or a gobbler during this one season. They only had it for maybe a couple of years, but you had to use either a bow or a shotgun. And I saw one out there, and he said, now, just pick the biggest one you can pick out now, because it's probably going to be a young Jake. And I took turkey hunting in the spring, and I had a slate and a little corn cob strikers that I used, a fellow in North Carolina made for me years and years ago, and it worked really well. And I was calling on doing that little Kiki run thing, and this whole flock, there must be 20 birds in it, and I picked this one big one out, and I was using a Ricker or a bow, and I just pulled back, and I said, well, I said, yeah, I'm either going to hit him, I was using a broadhead like you'd use with a deer. And a nice shot, and I dig him, that thing, it collapsed like you'd shot it with a rifle. I mean, it didn't flop or anything. I'd broken the spine, evidently, but I was shooting from elevated stand, which is, illegal to do, but, normally in the spring, everybody gets camouflaged, and I was just up in that tree, and they had been hunting in the fall. I guess they didn't realize somebody like me was crazy enough to shoot at them with an arrow.
Yeah, I've heard of them using those flufu arrows and shooting quail with them and stuff. It just amazes me. The technology in bow hunting has really evolved. Well, another story was one time I had two buddies come over to help me cut down this huge elm tree in the front yard. And we were we had made several runs, and it was getting late, and it was wintertime, and the dump was going to close, and so we took this last load, and the front wheels on that old 53 Chevrolet were hardly touching the ground, and we made it out to the dump and got rid of the wood. Well, my buddy Bill, he decides, he finds this stool, this commode, and I said, well, Bill, that thing's got to have a crack in it or something's bad about it. And he looked it all over. No, I need that for out the cabin. So I said, well, go ahead. I said, I ain't going to mess with it. But he put it up in the back of the truck and tied it in, and we headed for town. Well, we decided to go by the pool hall and play a game of pool for a quarter or whatever it was back then. So I parked up on... On the way back, we just left the dump, and a possum ran across the road. Bill said, stop. I said, I ain't messing with that thing. So I stopped the truck, and it was out in the country highway. And he jumps out, and he grabs that thing by the tail, and he starts spinning circles so the possum wouldn't bite him. This was a big possum. Well, instead of just turning it loose or something, he throwed it up in the back of my truck. And he jumps in the truck, and we decide going into town to play a game of pool. So we was in the pool all playing pool. I just assumed that the possum bailed out. I didn't even look. Well, come to find out, we was in there playing pool, and we heard all these horns honking, and traffic was backing up on Broadway in the little town of Pittsburgh, Kansas, which was very rare, and apparently that possum had crawled up in the commode and was sticking his head out, and you know how their eyes glow in the dark, and everybody was driving by and honking and looking at that possum.
That's pretty good. Oh, mate, we did a lot of the same things, if I told somebody, I said, if everybody knew what I was involved in, nobody didn't talk to me anymore. We did all kinds of stuff like that. Well, we had a lot of fun. We didn't get in any serious trouble. We just were mischievous, more or less. I had a good time. I grew up in a small town, not tiny, but a small town. It's one of those things where everybody knew everybody, and if you did something, somebody knew about it, somebody tell your parents, and that was the end of that. You know, so we had to kind of mind our P's and Q's. Even as teenagers, we did, because they'd had one of the guys and one of the city policemen in town there. I'd be coming in from Anderson or somewhere, and he recognized my car, and In fact, they had red lights, and they'd throw the little red lights on me to get me to slow down coming in town. They knew me. They knew who I was. I'd always slow down, but yeah, that's one thing. I don't think I ever got a speeding ticket when I was growing up. I think you went to later on in life when I got going too fast. But yeah, we had a local pool hall there, and I spent my grandmother was my grandfather. He passed away in 46 or so, I guess, but evidently he'd been pretty much of a rounder as he was living, and she always asked me, tried to get me, she said, don't go in that pool hall anymore, and she always asked my wife when we were dating right after we got married, she said, he's not gambling, is he, because her deceased husband, he would not pass up a card game.
I've seen a lot of gambling going on those pool tables, that's for sure. My neighbors were hot rodders, and they was one of the first ones in the NHRA from up there. They had an AGS, I don't know what you call it. It looked like a Model A Ford or something. I don't know which one, but I recognize it. It looked like those ones on Muscle Beach Party. And but their regular car that they had, I think it was their first hot rod. I don't know what kind it was. Anyways, Merle, their dad, was telling me they would go up on Broadway and just, we called it dragging the gut and looking for girls, of course. Well, which never happened, but at any rate, Dan and cliff and go up there, and I'm going to say it was kerosene. They had a Folgers coffee can up there, and they put a choke cable on it, and they get up there to 4th and Broadway, which is the busiest intersection in the town, and they try to get ahead of a Cadillac or something, and they'd rev that car up, and they'd pull that choke cable, and it would introduce kerosene or whatever it was they had in that can into the carburetion system. You couldn't see that intersection when they pulled off, when they pulled away from it, Jerry.
My father-in-law talked about doing stuff like that. He was his father, my wife's grandfather, was a Chevrolet mechanic in Royston for years. He was basically a master mechanic for them, and people come from all around to get him work on the cars. He was into all kinds of stuff like that. I've heard those same stories about putting some type of can in it and then doing stuff to people's cars, and we had our share of racing too. We had a couple of spots where you could measure off a quarter mile paper race, but it was generally pretty desolate section of the road. It wasn't like Kansas where you got nice flat straight roads. There were not that many of them in our part of the state, but it went on a lot. There was even some drag racing across the bridge down here on 29. That was done more often than people realize too. but we did a lot of stuff. But if we'd known better, we probably would never done it. M4DJC for IT.
KN4BWA.
Well, there's Steve. Let me see, it's 2:30. It's good afternoon, Steve. shoot. Well, how's your day going, Steve?
Well, I had a bunch of my guys up, and we got a little club. We build plastic models and stuff. Goofed around until about noon, went and got some lunch. Had a good morning. And then I got a service call. I got to run down and fix a little simple something, so I'm going to go do that this afternoon. I'm on the way to do that. But I heard y'all talking about back in the old days. Well, back in the not-so-old days, 68 to about 74, you know where the hot drag racing spot around here?
I come to South Carolina. I lived in Georgia then.
Well, we'd go downtown Greenville, we'd cruise Main Street, and while we were down there, we figured out who was going to run who and for how much and what, and then about 1 a.m. when they would run us out of downtown, we all went out to 385, and the old bridge at Pelham Road from just on the 85 side of that bridge at Haywood Road at 385, down out that flat from about 1 or 2 o'clock in the morning, we get out there because all the sheriff's deputies were half asleep and the highway patrol was somewhere else, and we'd had spotters and the county, they didn't seem to mind because nobody ever got hurt. We'd go out there and run from there out to that first bridge. Did that for several years, and around that time I had a 69 Plymouth GTX with a 426 Hemi 6-pack in it. I used to make my gas money for the week with that thing.
Yeah, that would do it all right. Well, I did that only on motorcycles, and we would go out to Atkinson Municipal Airport, and on the west side of it there was a place there that you could see for about a mile and a half, and we'd run a quarter mile on our motorcycles. And I'd take my Yamaha 250, and I'd try to beat those 250 Ducati Dienas. And I usually did. And once in a while, they'd catch me on the top end, but not very often. But that's the only thing I ever got a speeding ticket in was with a motorcycle, and I've had two in my life. One of them was justifiable, and one of them was not. And then I got one other ticket in my life, and that was for turning left off of Broadway at 10:30 at night in Pittsburgh, Kansas, when I went up to pick my sister up at the bus depot for $8. And that's the only ones I've ever had, knock on wood. Go ahead, Jerry.
I had a few. I didn't have many after I turned 18 or so. I had a couple. I was headed down to South Georgia once. Had a leak coming out of Danielsville, and it was a nice long straight highway like you head towards Athens, and it was a nice long straight there. And I usually put on about 85 or so and just run down there. And I didn't see the state trooper. They pulled up past the bridge. There's a little bridge that crosses the, can't remember what little bridge, creek or river it was, and then he was pulled up in there. I didn't see him, and I was doing 85 or 90, I guess. And they didn't have a radar. This is in 69, I guess. Might have been 70, but I don't think they had radar then, because he couldn't tell me how fast I was going. He just knew I was going too fast. And about 2 miles down the road, he caught up with me and pulled me over. He says, "Were you trying to outrun me?" I said, "No, of course not." I said, "I wasn't doing but I was doing about 85. I was driving them. You know, I know Steve probably knows it. I was driving. I had a 69 W31 Cutlass, which is a, it was fast. It was as fast as most medium sized cars, because it had a 350 in it, but it was 350 375, and it wasn't like the 442. But it was a fast car though to look like a regular car. But and I had to go back in the county seat, Danielsville. And the cash bond was $37. And I had money where somebody gave me some money to take back with me, and so I had to spend every nickel I had to pay that fine. But I paid the fine and went on about my business. And I've got caught a couple of times, you know. But I drove in sales from about 95 to 2008 and never got a ticket. And I put, hey, you drive 60,000 miles a year, I guess.
Well, I used to own my own little company, and I was in about the same boat. About 65, 70,000 miles a year out working on these machines. And about every 3 to 3.5 years, I just had it in my budget to replace a vehicle. And I figured it out one time, and in the years since 1976, I put on just a little over 2.5 million miles. And I figured it out, that's the same as going to the moon and back 5 times. I tell you what, my poor little behind is showing every mile of it these days.
This is N0TR. Yeah, I'm probably your spine, too, like mine, Steve. Well, not to change the subject, but I talked to K4LWE, Larry Eichmann. And if you hear him, he's really an interesting guy. I was looking at his site here on QRZ, and he makes these, let's see if he described them. When I'm not working with amateur radio, you can find me at one of the many historical parks in South Carolina. I demonstrate 1780-style coppering coopers made wooden buckets, churns, bowls, tankards, and tubs. And I make each container using period tools and techniques. They're absolutely beautiful, Steve. And it's K4LWE. So if you hear him, grab him. And he's also been an electronics engineer or electrical engineer all of his life. So he ain't no dummy. And I really enjoyed talking to him this morning. Just a real fine gentleman. Go ahead, Jerry. This is N0TR.
The conversation time, it was so interesting. I didn't want to interrupt, but he's a real interesting guy. Got a broad background, and you run into some interesting folks that I would hear often. Some of us aren't as interested as others are, like Steve, of course. But I've led a relatively calm life. But Steve, I sold Texas machinery, so I just traveled throughout the South, and I did a little bit of flying, but not a lot. But you know, towards about the time I left, things had already got down where, you know, everything was closing up, so I didn't drive much the last year or so, but I used to drive a lot, though. And Tom, you're talking about back problems I had. I think it was 2004, I wound up having to have a disc replace my neck. Just all that pounding over the years of driving, I wasn't accustomed to twisting around the seat and that sort of thing. I just wasn't used to doing all that sitting, and it took its toll on me. And after that, I never was as comfortable riding again, so I didn't drive as much probably the last 3 or 4 years I was working. But it takes a toll on you. You have to be careful, too, because there's some crazy people out on the road. They're worse now by far than they were when I was working.
Yeah, was it you, Tom, that just keeps saying, hey, walk amongst us? I'll tell you, there's some real winners out there.
Yeah, I forget who's the narrator or founding of that. I used to get these Darwin Awards. I used to get an email with those in it and telling what people had done. And it always ended something like Paul Harvey, you know. They walk among us, or now you know the rest of the story, as Paul Harvey used to say. Guys, I'm going to go. I'm getting tired here. I've been on here quite a while today. Really enjoyed it. It says it's 65 degrees in the sun out there. Enjoy it while you can, because on Thursday, she's going to go to pot. It's going to start raining hard about 1 o'clock in the afternoon on Christmas Eve and into Christmas, and then clear off and be cold. And I don't like cold. But at any rate, I was going to do some work on the chicken pen today, and I said, the heck with it. I didn't need to. I was just going to add another light out there. And you don't really need one. It looks like San Quentin out there now. Something walks into it, and all of the motion detectors and that. And so I'm going to leave it at that. And I'll sign with you too, Steve. Pleasure's all mine, and 73's, guys. And, oh, by the way, that K4LWE lives in Piedmont, South Carolina. This is Gerald TR. Go ahead, Jerry. I'm clear.
Talking to you again. You have a good afternoon. It is nice and warm outside right now. I can tell the house is warming up a little bit. Hope you have a good afternoon. And Steve, you take it, man.
Hey, Tom, try to behave yourself this afternoon. I'd hate to hear about Bernice having to clap you one over the top of the head. Oh, goodness. Have a good one, buddy. And I tell you what, I'll meet both of you down there at 385 at Haywood Road about 2 a.m. tomorrow morning. We'll go run our four cylinders. Hey, Jerry, you reckon we could get a little excitement going with some of these little four bangers they got out there today?
I don't know. I got a 2018 Accord. It's got they used to make the Accords and V6s and that, all four cylinder. Mine's got a intercooled turbo, and I tell you one thing, it's smooth and it's fast too. It's not like a horsepower deal. They ain't got much torque to it. It'll shoot up to 90-95 pretty fast, and faster than my reflexes are these days. But I tell you, I used to enjoy those muscle cars. Everybody had Chevelles, and one of the guys I graduated from high school had one of the first C-28s I'd ever seen. It was 69. It was a beautiful little car, and it was, gosh, that thing was fast. I think his was, he had the two four barrels on it. His was 435 horsepower. That thing was absolutely, I mean, it was like a rocket ship. You know, I never saw him races against anybody, but we had a guy that had one of the, you know, the old Hemis, not the GTX, but had one of the old Hemis, Roadrunner Hemis, I guess, 68, I think, and that thing. I mean, I don't think I ever saw anybody beat him, but he had either a 383 or a 411 rear end in, and he was hard to beat in a quarter mile.
Well, you know, I never really ran those high ratio rear ends. I had a 327 gear on the back of that 426 I had, and man, I'm going to tell you, tell you what, I had enough power behind that to where I could turn that 327 rear end, 327 gear rear end over it. It was scary fast. Matter of fact, whenever I'd really get after it, I could, let's put it this way. You know how your tires howl, you know, when you're spinning your tires? This thing wouldn't do that. It just sounded like a shredder. It just looked like a bug spray machine.